What's going on, guys? Welcome to AfterBuzz TV. Welcome to the after show for the 100. Now, this is season 3. The episode we are talking about is We Will Rise, season 4. This is actually season 4 We Will Rise, and we're excited to talk about what's going on. Hang out with us. We'll see you in 1 second.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion. AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Oh my goodness, listen to the song.
I know, I love Quiet Drive.
It's like 2002 again.
Is it 2002? Oh my god, I feel so old. I went to one of their concerts.
maybe it's not quite that old.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Quiet Drive is amazing. If you don't know what it is, get out of here.
So guys, the song we're listening to is Quiet Drive, Rise from the Ashes. And the episode tonight is We Will Rise. Oh, this song's great.
I love this song, and I love this band, and I'm really glad that we're playing it right now.
There's, like, an era of emo music from, like, this time.
Yep.
Emo rock that's, like, it's just great. Like, it makes me feel like I'm in high school again.
Hey, man, my top three alternative, like, rock favorite bands are, like, Fall Out Boy, Paramore, and Panic at the Disco.
Yeah.
So, you already know where that came from.
Yeah, the genre is just great.
Yeah.
It makes me feel like I wish that the soundtrack to Riverdale was, like, this music, but it wouldn't be the same
totally
show.
Different high school. Yeah. I don't think it would work out that well. Yeah.
So, anyway, guys, just enough of a tangent. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the AfterBuzz TV After Show for the 100. We're here to talk about the newest episode of season 4, which I wrote the name down, but the reason that I quoted season 3 and not the number of the episode is because I wrote neither of them down. So what is it? Like, is this episode...
This is episode 6.
This is episode 6.
Yes, We Will Rise.
Season 4, episode 6, We Will Rise. That's what this is.
Yeah.
So, there's a few different storylines going on in this episode, and we're going to break them all down. If you guys want to follow along in the conversation, we've got Alexis Torres on this side of the table. She's in the chat.
Hello, everyone. You can find me all over social media at @8torres890, and I was intrigued by how many flashbacks we got in this episode.
Got a graphic flashback or two.
Yeah. Wasn't ready for that.
And you guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram. My name is, in fact, Ben Bateman, and I do media. And we are going to talk about the whole thing. So let's just jump right into starting back at the Ark.
Yes. So obviously we take off
Arcadia.
It's late, guys. It's a thing. I love that it wasn't like we didn't jump from a different place. Like we didn't start from where Raven and Murphy were at. We literally started back up from after the explosion. Like we're doing cleanup at this point and everything. Yeah.
Something really interesting that I've noticed is so the first shot is Clark is waking up and she sees a picture, a hand drawn picture of Lexa,
mm-hmm.
And in her bed is Nyla.
I love how our faces were like. Wait, why is she naked?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting. I've noticed, like, episode to episode, they've made a pretty distinct point to reference Lexa a lot. Have you noticed this?
Mm-mm.
She gets referenced a lot by, like, that was what Lexa said, or that's what Lexa thought, or Lexa lives on through you, or here's this picture of Lexa. Like, in a way that... Okay, so Lexa was a super important character in this show and a super important character in the storyline.
Yep.
But also, I feel like any other show... If, like, a secondary love interest was to die the previous season, I don't feel like there's a reference to that character every episode. And I think that they've made a point to do it because of how important of a character she became culturally afterwards.
Right, but I also think at the same time that this show also brings up a lot of past people from the 100. Like, we got a Wells reference.
True.
Which I'm very upset with Monty. I mean, I knew what he was trying to do, but it was very out of character for him. But I also know that he's going through something. His character is changing because of the situation. But it was weird. We obviously saw Lincoln in this episode also. So I felt like it was one of those, because stakes are so high, they're bringing up all of their past, not sins, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I think they do.
And I feel like the 100, because of the fact that there's so much death and there's so much punishment for the things that they decide, or consequences, not punishment, consequences for the things that they decide and such, that Lexa does come up quite a bit because that's one of Clark's, you know, biggest moments.
It's relevant to the story also. I'm not saying that I think it's irrelevant. It's just, I just have noticed it's interesting. It does seem like there seems to be at least one reference in every episode to Lexa.
Yeah, I think maybe... I guess I'm just not looking for them.
Yeah.
You know, as much, but I do love it when I do see her. Like, I love that the fact that she hung the drawing up, even though I know some people, there's a lot of mixed feelings with her being with Nihilus. I'm I'm all for it, just because I'm like, yes.
She's coping, but we're not really sure. I still don't get the feeling that Nyla's like a real option for Clark. Like, I don't really think that that's going to go anywhere. It seems like it's a...
I mean, we don't know for sure, especially since a lot of people are in that mindset of like, we're going to die soon.
Right. It's like a one Nyla stand. Sorry.
Really? I'm just more, again, you know, especially after we just went to Klexicon, which we'll talk about more at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Just the fact that even though maybe for some people they're like, oh, I don't feel up for it. But the fact, again, I'm all for showing, you know, LGBTQ in any media format. Yep. So just having that back, even if it is for a one Nyla stand, it was still nice to see that back.
I know. It is funny, too. They kiss and you're like, it's not even like a, oh, wow. It's like.
Yeah,
that's TV, and that's great.
Yeah, and we can move on from there.
And it's just a casual thing that's going on. This isn't like a heartbreaking relationship. So, you have a bisexual lead on this show, and have for seasons, and it's like you're reminded of it occasionally. So, anyway, that starts the episode off, and the mission to go move the Hydrazine is launched.
Yep.
As we've got a couple things going on at Arcadia. We've got Octavia healing, and Bellamy goes to visit Octavia. At the same time, we've got a plan being hatched to move this Hydrazine because Raven and Abby need to use it to go into space in a 100-year-old spaceship.
In a 100-year-old spaceship.
So first and foremost, you've got an attack on Ilion, and everybody tries to kill him. Killian.
You are trying to pull out these puns as much as you can. This is terrible.
They're not good. So, first question: why does Kane care? Like, what? I think I understand why he's supposed to care and why he feels he needs to care, because he feels like if he lets this kid die, they're devolving, and once they lose order, they become savages.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also just like, bro, there's no more order in your world. Like, everything's burning. You're Chancellor, what does that even mean anymore? You're like this, like, broken culture, broken society. There's radiation poison coming. This guy just showed up and, like, burned half your home down.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you want to protect him?
I feel like, at least from, I mean, not to be biased, because everybody knows since, like, day one, I'm always like, Kane! But, like, in this aspect, I feel like, because Kane is that type of character where he tries to keep the peace as much as he can, I don't think he can cope with the fact of trying even, and I also think that because the fact that they've been in war so much and they've lost so many that he doesn't feel, I mean, I don't want to speak for him because, you know, but like the fact that he's like, I don't want us to revolt into this fact that we're just killing people just because we can, because we don't have we might not live the next day or whatever. That's not the point.
Yeah.
We're supposed to band together. I mean, clearly he should be punished, but there is no way to punish him either. So yeah.
I mean, let's just sort of wrap up that whole entire piece of the story. So it starts with them beating the crap out of Ilion and Kane saving him.
Scene was crazy. Yeah. I loved the way that they shot it, where it was like it was just flashlights or just very dim lighting.
And it was grainy, and they kept doing those quick.
I mean, it wasn't like Edgar Wright kind of cuts, but like the fact that it was just. Just imagining one person being literally kicked, punched, moved, dragged, whatever, by, like, maybe 20 people.
Yeah,
like,
right.
That's insane to me, in my head. So I can imagine. I was surprised that he was able to breathe.
Definitely,
after.
Yeah, the mob justice aspect. So he gets put into med bay, and you've got Nyla there, and she's helping Octavia, who is healing quickly. From taking a knife through the gut.
I mean, she's working on it. Even when she was running, she was holding her stomach at that point. But, yeah, she seemed... just pure willpower to live, I think, at this point.
She's a fast healer, for sure.
Hell
so,
yeah.
So she is healing, and you've got Ilion next to her, and she's having a conversation across the room with Ilion, basically like, you know what, like, I'm sorry that the blade doesn't care what you intended. It just cuts. You're going to die.
Yep.
And I wasn't quite sure that she was going to be the one to take him out, or wanted to be the one to take him out, but we do get the mob justice again, all yelling about, I have a 5-year-old son and he's not going to survive now because of this. We need to go take this guy out. And there's a bit of discourse from all the different characters, from Monty with Jaha.
Again, so it like threw me back, the fact that he was just like, you know, are we going to result back to how, like, when we hung Murphy, when he killed Wells or whatever, which we all knew. I mean, I don't know if he found out because we found out it was the girl.
He must have known. I think it's been so long since that's come up. We looked at each other for a second. Wait, we were like, wait, does Jaha know that? I'm sure Jaha knew that.
I was hoping that he knew that, but I mean, I don't know if we actually had that conversation of how Wells died in that aspect, too.
Because
it's been
Murphy
a while.
Also, because, like, Jaha also, like, had sort of adopted Murphy in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, I mean, crazy, but also sort of was, like, cool with him.
Yeah, he was trying to be that father figure for him, you know, in that aspect. But at the same time, it's also been a while since we brought up Wells, so that threw me back. And the fact that Monty was like, your son would be ashamed of you. I was like, what is happening right now?
Why do I feel like I seem to remember the little girl in episode 4 killing Wells?
No, it was. It was the little girl that it was slit his throat, I believe.
Yeah.
But they hung Murphy because they thought
it was Murphy. That's right. Okay, yeah, they thought it was Murphy. That's why I was confused there for a second.
But the thing is, Monty's not talking about the fact that he thought that Murphy killed him. It was the fact that we hung him.
Yeah, right.
Because we're like, you killed him. Let's hang him and, violence, you know, beat him. And yeah.
Demands violence.
So yeah, and that's what he's saying. He's like, are we going to result back to that? Which is funny because none of these adults were here.
I know.
When that happened. And so he's yelling, it's very interesting.
He's yelling at Jaha and he's like, you know, he's like, what's he say to him? He's like, all due respect, your son would be ashamed of you.
Yeah, it was... Like I said, like, it was so raw, and I was just like, this is weird coming from Monty, but again, we're getting to that point where I feel like these characters are going to be pushed to their limit in this aspect because of the fact that they literally don't know if they're going to live or die in the next few days.
Right.
So I think at this rate, Monty's frustrated.
Yeah.
And it just kind of came out at this point.
The stakes are very high. So that interaction is happening is basically Monty is trying as hard as he can to convince anyone to listen to him to save this kid Ilion. And finally, the mob breaks in. Kane pulls out the gun, gets shocked by his own man.
Ugh.
Miller's dad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Miller's dad who shocks him. He's like,
I believe so. I always forget who the guard is, because he's there, but I don't, like,
really get interaction. That's Miller's dad. We haven't heard much from him in quite a while.
I believe so.
He knocks down Kane, and Ilion gets dragged out, and Octavia, like, gets up, and you're like, you don't know how healthy she actually is, but she's like, yeah, all right, you know what, you want blood, it's yours, but I get to take the shot.
Yeah.
I get the kill, she says.
I mean, they have been, you know, butting heads and trying to kill each other for days now, so it makes sense.
Right, and she's obviously working through a lot of anger.
Mm-hmm.
She has a conversation with Bellamy early in the episode, and she also has this conversation with Kane once they're out there, and so let's cut to that. So they get outside, and the whole mob is just like, we're going to take this kid down. He's got to die. And how old do you think Ilion is? Do we know? Is he 14? Is that what it was?
I don't remember.
Yeah, does anybody in the chat know that? I think he's 16 is what I feel like.
Yeah, if you guys know, please put it in the chat so I can let everybody know.
So this is something I noticed, and I like wonder this sometimes. In shows like this, or in Game of Thrones, anything that's like sci-fi fantasy and has like a lot of warriors, like type of warrior characters running around, you have this really, really calm, point of view from characters who are about to be murdered.
Yep.
Like, when they're on their knees, it's always like, just get it over with. It's like the cool guy way to handle it.
I mean, yeah, because they know that they can't escape at this point, I guess. I know, or they give up.
But, like, that kid's being dragged out by, like, a mob of 30 people, and he's just got this frown on his face, and he's not, like, I would be terrified. I would be crying.
But, I mean, he's also a grounder. This is just how his way of life was, I guess, at the same time. I mean, I would understand. I mean, I feel like if they brought, I mean, maybe Jasper before... Mount Weather, like, I feel like if someone dragged him out and they were ready to shoot him, I feel like he would be, I'm not picking on him, but, like, I feel like because he's never seen war and anything like that, he would be like, please, have mercy on me or save me or something like that. I think he would be shaking. I feel like anybody who's never been through war would do that. But I think because he lived in a world where he had to survive, he's just like, and also I'm assuming that he's probably in pain.
Right.
He didn't think that he was going to survive it anyway. He just kind of gave up, which is unfortunate.
Fair.
You know?
Fair. So we've got that whole interaction. He's on his knees. He says, just get it over with.
16. Everybody thinks that 16. He's 16.
It seems about right.
Yeah.
Octavia's got the gun to his head, and we have this Kane jumps in, and he's like, you know what? This is what they did to Lincoln. He was on his knees here in the same spot. And Octavia finally lets out for the first time.
Yeah, because, I mean, she cried, clearly, when we saw, if we go back and watch, I mean, I don't want to, and it was really rough seeing it again, but, like, when that scene happened, and when she was up on the hill watching it from afar, she was crying. Like, it was happening, but she hasn't cried since then.
Yep.
She just kind of bottled everything back up and just chose to keep fighting on. But I feel like she hasn't had one of those, it's weird to say, but had one of those, like, really ugly, like, get-it-out cries.
Yeah, yep.
That lasts a few days and just needs to be alone and just get it all out.
Were you happy that she didn't kill Ilion?
Yes, I'm happy that he didn't die in the, by her hand, especially in the same exact way that Lincoln died, but I definitely thought someone else was going
to
do it.
I knew that she wasn't going to because yeah. she killed Pike, because they already gave her that revenge moment where she just murdered someone.
Yep.
And she had been killing, and I just felt like they weren't going to do that. But I don't agree with Jaha and Pike of being like, he's like, I'm doing the same thing you're doing. I'm saving our people. And then they're like, run? What are you doing? The kid just burned half of your... Like, what are you doing?
I think they're seeing it as maybe the big picture. They're like, we don't have time to deal with you. You've just ruined all these things, and we have to make up for it. So killing you... Because in my head, I'm saying, sure, let's kill him. Let's see what happens. What have you really gained from that? Satisfaction?
Yeah.
Really, though? Like, I mean, we've killed so many people. There's so much blood spilt onto this ground. What's the point now?
Yeah,
we have one more to add to that. So, like, I get that, but at the same time, I understand where their frustration is, where they're like, we just want an easy solution.
Yeah.
And clearly this guy needs to pay for what he did, but at the same time,
yeah,
it's not going to do anything. Because then what happens to the next person who, like, accidentally does something dumb, or they're going to start fighting to even get a spot? Like, you know, it's dumb.
So we'll see what ends up happening there. So then cut over to the bunker. We've got in the lab, we've got Luna on a couch, and she's got the bandage on her arm. You know, she's having blood drained. Mm-hmm. She's being, you know, rejuvenated. We've got Murphy helping Coach Raven through the simulator. She's 42 times, and she's just losing it. She's having, like, this aneurysm because she has, like, some sort of a tumor in her brain. And she is just – she's just going, like, she's all in. She's a genius, but she's also – you know, really struggling. And she finally, at the end of the episode, after all the turmoil, gets the simulator correct. She finally lands it in the water, and now we're down a barrel.
Yep.
And she seizures hard and starts foaming at the mouth.
Yeah, it sucks. And I do like the fact that Luna was the one that kind of talked to John. But I also like the fact that we got to see a side of Murphy. I mean, we have been seeing his softer side with, what's her name?
Amori.
Yes. So we get to see that, and that's great, but I would like to see more of that soft side with his original crew.
He just has so much self-loathing.
He does, and it makes sense. He's done a lot of things that he's not proud of. I mean, clearly we can tell from what Luna said that the fact that what happened to her leg is eating at him. He's just choosing not to acknowledge it, and I'm glad that he brought that up in this episode. So it definitely made him more human, in the fact that he does want to help Raven. He just doesn't know how far he can go.
Yeah, we got some background on a couple things. We got a lot of the same Murphy stuff that we're used to getting, but we also got some background on Luna here that we hadn't gotten before.
Mm-hmm.
As she talks Raven down, she has Raven repeat, "I give myself to the miracle of the sea," over and over again, and that calms Raven down.
Mm-hmm.
But as she's saying this, she says to Raven, "I know the darkness." And then when she's talking to Murphy, she says, "I know what it is like to hate myself. I killed my own brother." So these are all things I don't think we knew that Luna had this kind of darkness and this kind of self-loathing inside her.
I mean, I wasn't sure if it was, because it can't be from the AI, because she wasn't part of that. So there must have been something before, you know, that maybe not Nightblood related, but like just something in her upbringing that we haven't seen yet that'll probably come back up.
A little bit of background. That was definitely the first time. And Raven seizuring. I don't think they're going to kill Raven this season, but at the same time, the way that the story is going with her having essentially a tumor, would they do that? They got renewed for a fifth season. I think she's a pretty important character. It would seem odd to kill her, but
no, at least for me, you know, and maybe mine's more of a hope and a want, I really don't think that she's gonna die. I feel like we can, I mean, again, not to hate on Abby, because I want more females in television, period, but like, I feel like if out of everybody who would be going up to the space station, I could see Abby going.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think, I would be very surprised if they killed off Raven. Like, that would be one of those, like, twists that I was not ready for, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah.
That's pretty much the extent of what happened inside of the bunker today. That's where we leave off. She's really struggling, and it does appear that she's in a lot of trouble. So we're going to have to get some, you know, Abby's going to figure out a way to do something. But I guess Abby and Raven are planning on going up in a 100-year-old spaceship, so that should be pretty sweet.
Yeah.
And Raven does blow up on Murphy with some pretty, pretty vile words at one point.
Yep. Yeah, and it was, and again, just shows Lindsay Morgan's acting chops, because the fact that she can, that whole scene of her literally, like, coming out and being frustrated about the flight simulator, plus being angry about whatever the hell's happening, you know, within her darkness, if you want to call it. And then literally after she's being calm and her face seems like it went back to being innocent and, like, sad, and then immediately back into determination going, I'm going again, and went back up. Like, it was literally, like, five different emotions within, like, 10 to 15 seconds. Like, it was insane.
And no apology to Murphy. All he got later was,
but it was also very Raven of her, too, to not apologize, because it looked like she was about to. Like, it looked like she was, like, trying to figure out what she was going to say, and she's like, I'm going to go again. And I was like, ah, we got it.
She gives him the obligatory, let's end the scene with thanks later in the episode. Mm-hmm. You know, the thanks moment, like, which is supposed to, that's about as good as it's going to be. So the last bit of the episode we have is this mission with Bellamy and Clark and Rowan and all of the Asgata guys splitting off because they think the world's ending, and Tree Crew being murdered and Tree Crew chasing them, and this sweet intricate action sequence where Rowan jumps from a moving vehicle to another.
That slow-mo was insane, because we got slow-mo in the beginning of the episode too with Kane and everybody, but I think the slow-mo was more appropriate with Rowan jumping off of a moving truck.
Right. When he jumps, his shirt starts to lift. It only goes up to about his navel.
So I was going to say, I was like, you kind of saw your six-pack a little bit?
We didn't quite get his abs there.
A little bit, just a tiny bit.
But they could have. They decided not to. They elected to hide them. So he struggles, though, to kill one of his own dudes. He has to fight him on a moving vehicle.
I don't know what's going on. Either they need to give Rowan a better fight scene or something, because I feel like every time Rowan gets into a fight, he's always having a hard time where he loses. Yeah,
and I'm like, he took down those four dudes or six dudes to save Clark that one time, and that's pretty much
the extent. That was the last time.
That was the coolest thing he's ever done.
Yep.
Yeah, otherwise he always gets his ass kicked.
I'm like, somebody give him a fight scene, like something that's good where it makes him look like, I mean, he's still a badass. Like, that hasn't changed. I just want him to look better. Give him better fight choreography.
Yeah, I know. It definitely feels like Zach McGowan deserves that. Yeah. So we have this whole chase, this whole thing. They get their location, but they're down a barrel because they took an arrow from the Tree Crew that were chasing them. And then there was definitely a scene here that started to feel like we were going in the direction of a Clark Bellamy moment. They've now given us a few this season. They keep teasing it. There's a moment they're standing, the music starts, and she says, if I don't see you again, and Bellamy says, if I don't see you again, Clark's like, no, you know, she'll see.
She'll see how special you are. And I love how both of us were like, ah, there it is.
There's that line, right?
But then we had a moment where he goes, Clark, like, it looked like he was about to say something important, and then we got interrupted by Rowan about the barrel.
Yeah.
Some people I saw on Twitter were saying, like, oh, he's about to confess, and some people were like, wait, what was he actually going to say? So, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know, because there was that weird special look.
Totally. I know, and the music. That's what I'm saying. A couple different times
There's a little bit of music swelling happening.
It's, you know, it's possible Bellamy and Clark, that Bellark will never happen, and they'll just be best friends. And as they go, they'll just be best friends, like, continually. But I feel like with shows, they usually like to take best friends at the end of shows and make them romantically involved.
But the thing is, we've also seen Bellamy with a lot of different people. True. We've seen Clark with a lot of different people. I mean, you never know. I mean, if we end up getting them together, that's fine.
Yeah.
But again, if they don't and they end up finding somebody else, also fine. Right. So, either way, I'm gay. Yeah. Either way.
So, yeah, that's pretty much the extent of what happened in that scene. Let's get into predictions for a moment here and then talk a little bit about Klexicon.
Yeah.
AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Woo. So looks like next week we're going to be having tests finally on that. It also looks like we might actually get Black Rain this time. Yeah, because it looked like there was people running and looked like they were in pain as rain was falling. So
and
I'm assuming
just fake Black Rain on Jasper.
I thought that was really freaking smart.
Yeah,
like that fake like the fact that they used the Black Rain to get everybody out
the
of the
alarm.
Way.
Yeah,
that was great.
Yeah. If this is episode 6, we're going towards a mid-season finale soonish.
Yeah.
Unless there isn't going to be a break this time.
I mean, you never know. I mean, summer is kind of half and half sometimes. Yeah. Because we're in, like, the full
fall. Spring.
So, I mean, I think Easter would be the only time. I mean, but that's on a Sunday.
Yeah, so
sometimes
maybe
they don't air during the week of Easter.
They just missed last week. So, I think Raven, I just get this sneaking suspicion they're going to start moving Raven towards a death at the end of the season.
God, I hope not. That would suck.
I think this brain tumor thing is just going to keep getting worse, and I think that seems to be the place they're taking it.
Yeah, I mean, according to at least what Abby said in either, I think it was three weeks ago in her episode or 2 weeks ago, was the fact of she also might have one as well, so that could also be a factor. still trying to figure out what Jasper's doing with his life since he's just handing out moonshine and giving out Dr. Seuss quotes.
He's just getting ready to die. That's the other thing. Jasper is definitely ready. He's going to die this season.
I don't know, man.
So, yeah. That is pretty much what I have to say. If you guys want to find me, you can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram.
You want to talk about Lexicon real quick? Yeah. Okay, I was like, I'm so confused.
This is people watching the episode, yeah.
You can find me at atorres890, and let's jump into what we did last weekend.
Yeah, we got to go to Vegas and cover Klexicon. It was so much fun. It was unbelievable. I mean, the death of Lexa in 307 last season spawned this whole convention about positive rep for LGBTQ women on television, and they had all these amazing stars and speakers, and Yael was there, Joelle was there with us. It was just so much fun. We got to meet fans. We got to attend incredible panels. I got to eat a 24-layer chocolate cake.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it was definitely a life-changing experience for me as a bisexual mixed-race female. I got to make a lot of connections and a lot of talks, for future podcasts with certain things. They're already talking about next year as well. Yep. I think there was 4,000 people turnout or something
close
like that.
To four,
it was really, really close to that. So that was just so many ladies. but it was just awesome to see a bunch of people coming together. There's a lot of artwork, which I'm sad I didn't get to bring with me because I wanted to give away a piece of artwork to a fan, which has Lexa and Clark together. That comes with these cute little, well, not cute because they're tiny, but the gear design that Lexa has on her head. Yeah. There's little samples. I have those. So, keep an eye out for a contest that might be coming up later on.
Definitely.
It's just there's so many different panels. Yael rocked it as a moderator for the Person of Interest panel, Lost Girl panel, and a bunch of other stuff that was going on. Ben was running around doing awesome interviews with so many Lexa cosplayers things like that.
I got to be a guest judge for the cosplay contest.
You did? And there was a little mini Lexa. It was so cute. If you don't know what we're talking about, you should look up pictures of hashtag mini Lexa because it's adorable.
Yeah,
she gave me a hug and I was a weeping mess. It was terrible. there was a great queer women of color panel that actually sparked another extra panel at the end of the con, which wasn't even planned, which was insane. And I think there was their biggest panel was the Person of Interest panel, which had over 700 people who attended.
Yeah.
And we were all in there enjoying all the fun that was there.
The Way Out panel was pretty wild, too.
I didn't get to attend that one because that one I was like, I need sleep after driving. But I made a lot of great friends. We also met a lot of great fans, and it was just, it was such an experience to talk with a bunch, at least from my perspective, of talking to queer women and being able to just sit in the safe place. I loved it because we all hung out the entire day, and as soon as the con was over and we had to walk out into, the real world, a lot of people tweeted me. They're like, I don't want to leave.
I know. Well, I think, I wrote a little, a small piece after we got home. Mm-hmm. It was, five things Klexicon did right. And I'm working on a video as well that I will be putting out, just, a little, diary thing. But some of the things I pointed out that I thought were really interesting were, it was 3,000 plus people of all positivity.
Mm-hmm.
And in a time where an event that happened that was so, so sad and so hard for so many people in the community to be the thing that started this convention, and then for the convention to be just hopeful, excited people was really pretty amazing. Jason Rothenberg's name didn't come up, and if it did come up, it would come up and just come and go, and that happened, and it wasn't, there was no hate, it was really unbelievable.
Yeah, the camaraderie in that entire weekend was more than I've ever had, probably in a lifetime. There was a bunch of beautiful trans women who were walking around, and there were some people that weren't big fans of it that were in the casino, not in the actual con themselves, but people stood up and was like, hey, your opinion doesn't matter here. This con is for us. This is the whole point. Because there were people who were like, oh, wow, is there a lesbian convention happening? And it didn't matter. Nobody cared about what was happening as soon as you walked out those doors, because everybody walked out in groups. We all made friends. We all exchanged numbers. And we're all in media. So we were able to connect and get the word out that we are here.
Yeah.
And it was great seeing everybody, allies, just everybody in general being there and just supporting what this cause was, and I'm really glad that they decided to make this con, because as soon as this is over, people are still talking about it. We're a weekend?
Yeah.
It still has not changed.
So I think year two will be pretty amazing. I highly recommend it, guys. It was an absolute blast, and thanks for hearing us talk about it.
And thanks for Klexicon for having us out there.
Yeah,
I mean,
so cool.
It was
so
just,
unbelievable.
Again, life-changing and fantastic. I mean, I think I've said that 8 times to the people that work there, but that's... I could not take another word or another phrase because that's what it was.
Yeah.
At least for me.
I had an unbelievable time, and I think it was run like a totally high-end pro convention. Mm-hmm. It's crazy for its first year that it was that great.
Yeah.
It was just so much fun. So yeah. I can't wait to go back next year. I will definitely be back, and I think it'll be a huge success again. So yeah. Thanks, guys, for watching, and thanks for listening, and we will see you same time, same place next week.
Bye, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.